I am trying to cure my own sores. If I were to show you a swollen foot, or an inflamed hand, or some shriveled sinews in a withered leg, you would permit me to lie quiet in one place and to apply lotions to the diseased member. But my trouble is greater than any of these, and I cannot show it to you. The abscess or ulcer is deep within my breast. Pray, pray do not commend me. Do not say, what a great man! He has learned to despise all things. Condemning the madnesses of man's life, he has made his escape. I have condemned nothing except myself. There is no reason why you should desire to come to me for the sake of making progress. You are mistaken if you think that you will get any assistance from this quarter. It is not a physician that dwells here, but a sick man. I would rather have you say, on leaving my presence, I used to think him a happy man and a learned one, and I had pricked up my ears to hear him, but I have been defrauded. I have seen nothing, heard nothing which I craved, and which I came back to hear. If you feel thus, and speak thus, some progress has been made. I prefer you to pardon, rather than envy my retirement. Then you say, is it retirement, Seneca, that you are recommending to me? You will soon be falling back upon the maxims of Epicurus. I do recommend retirement to you, but only that you may use it for greater and more beautiful activities than those which you have resigned. To knock at the haughty doors of the influential, to make alphabetical lists of childless old men, to wield the highest authority in public life. This kind of power exposes you to hatred, is short-lived, and, if you rate it at its true value, is tawdry. One man shall be far ahead of me as regards his influence in public life, another in salary, as an army officer, and in the position which results from this, another in the throng of his clients. But it is worthwhile to be outdone by all these men, provided that I myself can outdo Fortune. And I am no match for her in the throng. She has the greater backing. Would that in earlier days you had been minded to follow this purpose. Would that we were not discussing the happy life in plain view of death. But even now, let us have no delay. For now we can take the word of experience, which tells us that there are many superfluous and hostile things. For this, we should long since have taken the word of reason. Let us do what men are wont to do when they are late in setting forth and wish to make up for lost time by increasing their speed. Let us ply the spur. Our time of life is the best possible for these pursuits. For the period of boiling and foaming is now past. The faults that were uncontrolled in the first fierce heat of youth are now weakened, and but little further effort is needed to extinguish them. And when, you ask, will that profit you, which you do not learn until your departure, and how will it profit you? Precisely in this way, that I shall depart a better man. You need not think, however, that any time of life is more fitted to the attainment of a sound mind than that which has gained the victory over itself by many trials and by long and oft-repeated regret for past mistakes, and, its passions assuaged, has reached a state of health. This is indeed the time to have acquired this good. He who has attained wisdom in his old age has attained it by his years. Farewell. Letter 69. On Rest and Restlessness. I do not like you to change your headquarters and scurry about from one place to another. My reasons are, first, that such frequent flitting means an unsteady spirit, and the spirit cannot through retirement grow into unity unless it has ceased from its inquisitiveness and its wanderings. To be able to hold your spirit in check, you must first stop the runaway flight of the body. My second reason is that the remedies which are most helpful are those which are not interrupted. You should not allow your quiet, or the oblivion to which you have consigned your former life, to be broken into. Give your eyes time to unlearn what they have seen, and your ears to grow accustomed to more wholesome words. Whenever you stir abroad, you will meet, even as you pass from one place to another, things that will bring back your old cravings. Just as he who tries to be rid of an old love must avoid every reminder of the person once held dear, for nothing grows again so easily as love. Similarly, he who would lay aside his desire for all the things which he used to crave so passionately must turn away both eyes and ears from the objects which he has abandoned. The emotions soon return to the attack. At every turn they will notice before their eyes an object worth their attention. There is no evil that does not offer inducements. Avarice promises money, luxury a varied assortment of pleasures, ambition a purple robe and applause, and the influence which results from applause, and all that influence can do. Vices tempt you by the rewards which they offer, but in the life of which I speak, you must live without being paid. Scarcely will a whole lifetime suffice to bring our vices into subjection and to make them accept the yoke, swollen as they are, by long-continued indulgence, and still less if we cut into our brief span by any interruptions. Even constant care and attention can scarcely bring any one undertaking to full completion. If you will give ear to my advice, ponder and practice this. How to welcome death, or, even if circumstances commend that course, to invite it. There is no difference whether death comes to us or whether we go to death. Make yourself believe that all ignorant men are wrong when they say, "It is a beautiful thing to die one's own death." But there is no man who does not die his own death. What is more, you may reflect on this thought: no one dies except on his own day. You are throwing away none of your own time, for what you leave behind.